Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. Coming up later this hour, we will talk about the Obama Justice Department now saying they will try Khalid Sheikh Mohammed in a military tribunal after all. So no lower Manhattan civilian trial. Do you like that? We'll talk about it later. Also, the death of Columbia professor Manning Marable, just as his controversial new book about Malcolm X was about to come out. We will talk to someone who knows both Marable and the revelations about Malcolm X and the allegations against the NYPD. So we have a lot to talk about this hour here on the Brian Lehrer Show. But first, you already know that Craigslist can help you find an apartment. But did you know it can help you monitor your landlord? That's one of the items in a brand new plan unveiled yesterday by the New York City public advocate, Bill de Blasio, to identify and crack down on the city's worst landlords. The public advocate is also in the news right now for his report with the Administration for Children's Services on the death of Marcella Pierce after ACS caseworkers allegedly skipped family visits and faked the records about them. So we'll talk about landlords, children, and get the public advocate's reaction to the state budget and whether he thinks teacher layoffs are inevitable, too. Bill de Blasio, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian.
So what are you doing with Craigslist?
We're thrilled to be working with Craigslist. You know, it's so important that consumers now are going to know, meaning tenants, are going to know if they are walking into a building with a huge number of housing violations and a bad landlord. And Craigslist has been fantastic. They are creating a link right up front to our worst landlords watch list. And I think it's going to empower prospective tenants, but it's also going to be another incentive to some of these bad landlords to get their act together, because this will now have real market ramifications for them.
This is part of a larger housing policy push, which we'll get to. But can current tenants, people listening right now, use Craigslist to help get better services from their landlords?
Well, they can use Craigslist to find out through our watch list which landlords have a huge number of housing violations. These are health and safety violations, very serious violations, and that also allows them through our website to link to organizing efforts, to link to efforts to bring tenants together across different buildings to stop landlords from openly violating the law. What it literally comes down to is landlords not providing heat, not providing hot water, not making health and safety repairs, and getting away with it. These organizing efforts, this public attention, hitting landlords in the wallet, that's what's going to change things.
What are the specific categories of building maintenance or services provided that are cataloged?
Literally, you know, what's called B and C violations by the City Housing Department, HPD. It includes items like not providing heat and hot water, mold, which can cause disease, you know, rats and other vermin, and not making repairs to leaks that can cause flooding. Literally all of the fundamental problems that a tenant could confront, security problems like non-working locks, all of that gets any landlord who doesn't make those repairs gets a B or a C violation. If they get enough of those, they go on our worst landlord watch list.
And so I guess the advance is being able to aggregate this stuff on a website to monitor conditions in private rental properties, because these are records the city already has. They're just easier for the general public to look at now, right?
Well, yes, and beyond that, Brian, you know, the city had only limited tools for enforcing the law. I mean, literally a limited number of inspectors, laws that are not particularly strong, and an unwieldy housing court system. The package of proposals that we talked about today will strengthen penalties, but even with the current ones, the watch list allows a lot more focus on the worst of the worst. It allows us to find all the different ways that are taking advantage of the city. And, you know, what I'm trying to do is stop the city from inadvertently rewarding some of these landlords, for example, by leasing some of their buildings or providing subsidies to some of their tenants to end up in the landlord's pocket.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that we can really focus on the repeat offenders in a very public manner, you know, it allows tenants to organize, but it also allows government to actually focus its enforcement actions much more efficiently.
I see there are also carrots in your plan to help some landlords repair shoddy buildings, for example, correct?
That's right. And, you know, vast majority of landlords actually do their job and follow the law. for those, for the law-abiding ones, if they're having a problem, for example, they're having a significant repair problem and they're having a cash flow issue, you know, there are low-interest loans that the city can help them get. If they are in a situation where they are trying to do their job but need help, for example, a lot of them want to access subsidies that are available from the city, such as the Section 8 program for affordable housing, but it's a very unwieldy program. The inspection process is lengthy. We want to streamline it and make it more user-friendly for tenant and landlord alike. That's, you know, there should be some rewards for those who do well, and for those who don't, there should be very clear economic penalties.
Do you think New York City has much of a slumlord problem? How would you characterize the size of it?
You know, it's interesting. Having really done this research now over the last year, it's less than I expected, but where it exists, the sheer extent is breathtaking. We were up at a building in Kingsbridge section of the Bronx earlier, and there are some individual repair categories that have been consistent. In other words, repairs not done consistently, literally, since 1986 in that building. So, you know, you're talking about such consistency of these repairs not happening and there being no legal or economic consequence that a quarter century has gone by, and the landlords think it's part of doing business. And that's the slumlord ethic that is sadly quite strong. It may not be numerically as much as it used to be, but it unfortunately qualitatively is just as strong as ever.
Is the mayor on board? Do you need the mayor on board to get these new penalties as well as incentives that you want?
You know, the mayor has been supportive, and the city housing department, HVD, has been very supportive of the watch list in general. The mayor was supportive of legislation I passed recently called the HEAT Act, which increased penalties for landlords who didn't provide heat and hot water. You know, we turned to the administration on this question of leases, you know, not rewarding a bad landlord by giving them the opportunity to profit from a city lease in other buildings they have, and the city's been very receptive. So I think this is an area where the Public Advocate's Office and the Mayor's Office are working well together.
New York City Public Advocate Bill de Blasio is my guest on WNYC. To child welfare, the Marcella Pierce case, as you well know, revealed that at least two staff members of the Administration for Children's Services were allegedly negligent in managing her case. Those two staffers have actually been indicted on criminally negligent homicide. But does this go up the chain now that you've done a report with ACS? Do you think there's a leadership problem on an institutional level, or is this a couple of bad apples?
No, there are real structural problems that need to be addressed, and I think this report, this task force, actually got us somewhere. You know, the administration came to me back in December, a few months after the Marcella Pierce tragedy, and proposed this task force, and I said I would only participate if it would include independent, you know, thinkers and analysts, and if there could be a series of outcomes that might go beyond the administration's previous policy, including, you know, devoting more resources to preventing child abuse. And the ground rule was accepted that it would be an independent process. And what we came up with was some real changes in supervision. There's going to be a much tighter supervision process around any medically fragile kids. There's going to be more oversight of caseworkers and supervisors via the child stat system that's based on the crime stat system in the police. And an investment of about $14 million in preventative services, which are literally when social workers and others intervene in a family in crisis and stabilize the family before a spiral towards violence occurs. That's a major series of changes. So I think there were structural problems. This begins to address them. I think the leadership of ACS, Commissioner Mattingly, has been an agent of reform, but we needed these additional pieces.
Does he have your confidence?
Absolutely. Because he will admit the agency's mistakes and because he will participate in reform efforts, and I've seen that repeatedly from him.
One of the specific findings, you found that of the 223 preventive cases that closed in the spring of last year, 42 cases should not have been closed. And in 9 of those cases, the child's safety was even in danger. And in 33 cases, the family still needed help. So what's going on? That's 19% of all closed cases that you looked at for that season shouldn't have been closed.
I think what happened is this agency was really, really cut back severely in recent years. You know, over the course of the decade, well over 1,000 staffers were lost. The preventative services that we know work were cut back to the point that families could not get them when they needed them. and there were a number of transitions happening, you know, basically retrenchments because of budget cuts, that I think created a real inefficiency and miscommunication in the agency. Now, part of why I feel positive about the outcome of our task force is we're locking in the notion that these preventative services now will be baselined in the budget. They'll be a permanent feature, and that creates stability, and that makes it a lot easier to keep track of cases and provide support. But you're right. What we found in this report was not encouraging. You had a lot of kids who were on the verge of falling through the cracks in a very dangerous way.
Does this change the budget calculus for the current budget negotiations toward the July 1st fiscal year? Obviously, there are already many cuts to many important services on the table. You, I'm sure, along with members of City Council, are working for certain restorations to services. Are you now standing up and saying, I, the public advocate, believe that more money needs to go to children's services, and so we still need to take more out of other great things?
I do believe we can't keep cutting back the personnel at children's services, and I do believe we can't keep cutting back child care. I literally think ACS both protects kids and gives them the foundation to succeed in school, and it's, you know, one of the most fundamental things we do. So even though this baselining of the preventative services is a big step forward, there are other big problems that ACS is still facing. I mean, look, one time, and this is part of why I respect Commissioner Mangley, I asked him at a hearing a few years ago when I chaired the General Welfare Committee, I said, with child care centers, when they close, do you have any evidence they ever have the opportunity to reopen in better times? And he said, honestly, in his experience, he had never seen that happen. I think the centers that are in danger this time, you're talking about 15 centers in low-income communities around the city. You know, we lose them now, we don't get them back. That, to me, is a structural concern and therefore needs to be a budget priority.
New York City public advocate Bill de Blasio, my guest on WNYC. The state budget. Obviously, everybody who represents the city is not going to be happy about how the state budget turned out with respect to aid to the city. But Mayor Bloomberg seemed even angrier about what was not in the budget, the power for the city to negotiate pension changes with city unions without an act of the legislature getting involved, and the power to lay off teachers by merit rather than seniority. Should he have those? Yes, for you, as somebody who may want to be mayor in a few years, should the mayor have those things?
Every mayor in New York City has a tension with Albany, and I agree with him that we should have gotten more from Albany budgetarily. Where I think he's wildly off base is in trying to force into the budget equation issues that didn't belong, like LIFO, that did not belong in the 3 months crucial, delicate period when Andrew Cuomo was trying to fundamentally change the culture of Albany and
LIFO
balance
is
the budget.
Last in, first out.
Last in,
layoffs.
First out. So on that issue, I think it was a real misstep by the mayor. I think he created an air of tension and you know, negativity with the governor that wasn't helpful to New York City getting its fair share. And I think, bluntly, had Albany not succeeded in creating some stability again in the government process, nothing could have been worse for New York City for the future. So I don't understand why the mayor wasn't more supportive of the governor and didn't agree to hold back on some of the other concerns until this first crucial budget was achieved.
So are you saying that that was a negotiating mistake, or are you saying that you don't support reform of LIFO?
I believe we have to reform seniority. I don't agree with the mayor's particular version of that reform, nor the way he timed it, but I do agree, and I think the governor said this correctly, that we have to reform the seniority system. I just think for the mayor, given that the governor had to create probably one of the most delicate balances any governor literally in the history of the state has ever tried to achieve in passing this budget on time, I just think it was counterproductive of the mayor to bring non-budgetary issues into the debate, and surprising given the dependency of New York City on New York State, a very risky move on that level.
What would your version of seniority reform be?
I think you would treat seniority as an important factor, but have a variety of measures, test scores, classroom observation, other factors to determine if a teacher was up to snuff. If a teacher was consistently poor, of course they shouldn't be in the teaching profession. You know, I think seniority is supposed to mean something, but not so much as someone gets to continue being a teacher if they can't teach.
I was talking to an older teacher over the weekend who said that he's afraid that principals will be able to find any excuse to lay off the older teachers just because they are higher paid and, you know, use something in their record that doesn't really make them an incompetent teacher, but whatever they can hang on to get rid of the most expensive teachers and hire more lower paid teachers. You think we can prevent that?
We can prevent it if we give some weight to seniority in an equation with other factors, so that there's not a disincentive to keep the senior teachers. The person you spoke to, I think, raises a real point. It's going to be tough budget times for years to come. You set up the wrong equation, it becomes a shooting gallery where it's easy for principals to get rid of anyone who's a veteran and costs more. You know, my two kids are in public schools, and part of my objection here also is there are good and bad teachers who are newcomers. There are good and bad teachers who are veterans. It doesn't cut so squarely one way or the other. I think sometimes in the past, the union has made it sound like all veteran teachers are good, and I think the mayor sometimes makes it sound like all newcomers are, you know, instant successes. The truth is neither. It's a mixed bag. Those who don't teach well over a period of time need to leave.
Do you think that any teacher layoffs will be necessary in the city now with the state budget that's been passed?
I think the mayor is trying to move a layoff agenda for these other reasons as well, because he wants to try and achieve what he sees as reform. I don't think it is numerically necessary, because I think we would literally be making a foundational mistake to choose cutting teachers over cutting so many of the other areas in the Department of Education alone. Department of Education, I mean, I came out with a report a few weeks ago that showed about $50 million alone between teacher recruitment and other services that were much less necessary than classroom teachers. We all know about the consulting contracts and technology contracts, et cetera. My argument would be, you know, in a $22 billion education budget, there's room to cut other things before you cut classroom teachers.
New York City public advocate Bill de Blasio. Before you go, one last thing. The New York One Marist mayoral poll that came out the other day. Undecided is the front runner with 27%. Then all the likely candidates are in a small range, from Anthony Weiner at 18% to you at 9%, Christine Quinn, Bill Thompson, John Liu, all in that range. Any reaction other than it's meaningless?
That undecided guy is very popular.
all over the country.
Yeah, he is someone special, let me tell you. No, right now, especially given the discussion we just had on the budget, people should stay focused on the issues of today. It's well over 2 years till the mayoral primary. There's plenty of time to sort that out. But no, these early polls are just about current name recognition, nothing grander than that.
The poll did find that name recognition doesn't help everybody, because 60% of New Yorkers do not want Eliot Spitzer to run for mayor of New York. As far as I know, he likes his job at CNN. Bill de Blasio, thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in a minute, we will talk about the Obama Justice Department's decision not to try Khalid Sheikh Mohammed as a civilian in Lower Manhattan. Stay with us.